So this summer, we're doing something that you might have noticed if you read the email that we sent. We are going to give you, we being primarily me and Reverend Joel, we are going to give you a summer long of Ernest Holmes, the founder of the science of mind and religious science. We're going to go back to basics. We're going to introduce you to the concepts. We're going to have it come more alive. It's going to take form on Sundays. Reverend Joel, if there's enough interested participants and you're willing to get up or even earlier, from 9 till like 9:50 on Sunday mornings, this will all be scheduled. He's going to offer you a class, and he's going to offer you a class about Holmes. We're going to bring in more of Holmes' books. I'm so great having Reverend Joel be part of Penguin Publishing. Because he has the ability to bring things back into print. You know, that I sit and just wish things were in print. Well, he gets to bring them into print. And so there are new books that he's bringing back into print. And so we're going to bring them into the bookstore. We're going to bring them here for you. You're going to have opportunities to pick up kind of study guides or homework sheets if you want to do it, if you want to take the summer and really understand why it is that you come here. Because sometimes, you know, Holmes's name doesn't even get announced on a particular Sunday. You know, you get my version of the science of mind, and sometimes it's not even science of mind. It's what has inspired me. You know, for me, the science of mind has inspired the transformation of my life in many ways. And some things are not new to me, but the science of mind gave me the vehicle. It gave me a vehicle that I didn't have. And I just absolutely love and adore this teaching. And I'm going this summer, I'm going to Asilomar. Asilomar is the summer conference. It's happening now for 2 weeks. It's like the very end of July and the first 2 weeks of August. It's the funny place, the way the dates fall. And you go there and you meet some of the best speakers. They bring in other speakers. They have a fabulous music program. It is set on this little peninsula called Pacific Grove, and between Pacific Grove and Monterey, north of the 17-mile drive, and that very famous golf course that's there. It's stunning. It's an old YMCA or YWCA campsite. It's stunning. It's an event that if any of you have the way of getting there financially, I would go no less than one time in your life, although once you go once, you're going to want to go back, because you'll be there with 800 or 900 people who all think exactly like you. And it's wonderful food, and you're on the ocean, for God's sake. It is just stunning. Back in 1959, Ernest Holmes, many of us suspect that he knew he wasn't long for this earth. I don't remember how old he was when he passed. I don't have that age in my mind right now. But it really appeared that he knew. And he gave his last sermon by the sea in the August of 1959. And I want to read it to you. Now, this for many years was out of print, but what happened was now it's in the public domain, because when something's, after it's been around for 50 years, it goes in the public domain. So what I did do was I printed out, some of you might want a copy of it. It's a beautiful reading, and it is on the table when you walk out if you want to go home with a copy of it. But the beautiful thing is now you can Google this and come up with it, as long as you look for Sermon by the Sea and not Sermon on the Mount. So I want to read this to you, and just it is a tradition at Asilomar that Reverend Dr. J. Neil, had to get his name. He reads this every year in the chapel on the Asilomar grounds with beautiful music behind him. And he does that because he knew Holmes, and he knew Fenwick, Holmes's brother. And he, you know, at the very end of Holmes' life. So he is one of the gentlemen, one of her historians, who has a keeper of many of the original texts, and he's got great stories. And just if you want to know something about Ernest Holmes, he knows it. If you want to know something about the early teachers, he knows it. He was just, you know, he's amazing. And this was Ernest Holmes's charge to us, to those of us attempting, and I say attempting, because if you're still having any suffering in your life, you're still working at it, those of us attempting to bring this teaching alive in our lives. So please enjoy. These are the words of Ernest Holmes in 1959, his last address at Asilomar. Having had the privilege of starting religious science, I would wish, will, and desire above all things else that the simplicity and purity of our teaching could never be violated. There is a purpose of simplicity, a consciousness of unity, a straight-line thinking in our philosophy that has never appeared before in the world outside of the teachings of men like Jesus and Emerson. There was nothing obscure in the teaching of Jesus. He just said that it was the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Why don't you take it? He said that there is nothing but God. Why don't you believe it? He was the last of the great Jewish prophets, the greatest line of emotional prophets the world has ever known. We also find a great intellectualism in Emerson, who never contradicted himself. He gave us the most simple statement of intellectual spiritual perception, probably, that has ever been put into print. As that of Jesus, it was most simple, direct, meaningful, and feelingful. We inherit this. It would be my desire that the simplicity and the purity and the directness, that straight thinking, should never depart from the techniques of our practitioners or instructions of our teachers or understanding of our lay people. It is the most direct impartation of divine wisdom that has ever come to the world, because it incorporates the precepts of Jesus and Emerson and Buddha and all the rest of the wise. And I would desire that in our teaching there should never be any arrogance, for it always indicates spiritual immaturity to me. Others will arise who will know more than we do, but they will not be better or worse. They will be different and know more than we do. Evolution is forward. I would say that we should not build out of the body of our simplicity, that we should not build out of the body of our simplicity and grandeur and beauty other creeds loaded with superstition, a fear of the unknown, and a dread of the unseen. We have discovered a pearl of great price. We have discovered the rarest gem that has ever found setting in the intellect of the human race. Complete simplicity, complete directness, a freedom from fear and superstition about the unknown and about God. And we have rediscovered that which the great, the good, and the wise have sung about and thought about, the imprisoned splendor within ourselves and within each other, and have direct contact with it. Whether we call it the Christ in us, or the Buddha, or Atman, or just the Son of God, the living spirit, makes no difference. You and I are witness to the divine fact that we have discovered an authority beyond our minds, even though our minds utilize it. Out of this, we have prepared ourselves. I think, I hope, I pray, I believe. Find me one person who is for something and against nothing, who was redeemed enough not to condemn others out of the burden of his soul, and I will find a Savior, another Jesus, and an exalted human being. Find me one person who no longer has any fear of the universe, or of God, or of man, or of anything else. And you will have brought me to someone in whose presence we may sit, and fear shall vanish as clouds before the sunlight. Find me someone who has redeemed his own soul, and he shall become my redeemer. Find me someone who has given all that he has in love without morbidity, and I will have found the lover of my soul. Is this not true? Why? Because he will have revealed to me the nature of God and proved to me the possibility of all human souls. This is what religious science stands for. It is not a new dogmatism. It is not a new authority generated from a new alleged revelation of the God who never revealed anything to anybody as such. Else he could not have revealed all things to all people. There is no special dispensation of providence, but there is a great specialized dispensation which the great and the good and the wise and the just have known, even though they knew it intuitively. Find me one person who can get his own littleness out of the way, and he shall reveal to me the immeasurable magnitude of the universe in which I live. Find me one person who knows how to talk to God, really, and I shall walk with him through the woods, and everything that seems inanimate will respond. The leaves of the trees will clap their hands, the grass will grow soft under him. Find me one person who communes with cause and effect, and in the evening star will sing to him and the darkness will turn to light. Through him, as the woman who touched the hem of the garment of Christ was healed, shall I be healed of all loneliness forever. Find me someone who is no longer sad, whose memory has been redeemed from morbidity, and I shall hear laughter. Find me someone whose song is really celestial, because it is the outburst of the cosmic urge to sing, and I shall hear the music of the spheres. Find me one person who no longer doubts, no longer wavers, but not one who, with a proclamation of superiority, says, "Look at me, I have arrived." I will not listen to that. Only that which reveals me to myself can be the message to me. Only that which gives me back to myself can save me. Only that which leads me to the God within me, myself, can reveal God. And only that person can do it to whom the vision has come through his own efforts, through the gift of God. Of course, the grace of God abounds by divine givingness. God has forever hung himself upon the cross of men's indifference. God has forever, but without suffering, given himself, but we have not received the gift. Find me one person who has so completely divorced himself from all arrogance, and you will have discovered for me an open pathway to the kingdom of God here and now. Up until now, the search has been in far-off corners of the earth, and we have knelt upon a prayer rug and been wafted away in our morbid and fearful imagination over ethers of nothingness to places that have no existence, the temples of our unbelief. And we have come back empty. What went ye out into the wilderness for to see? Find me somebody who has detached his emotional and psychological ego from the real self without having to deny the place it plays in the scheme of things and without slaying any part of himself, because the transcendence is there also. And I will have discovered the ineffable in this individual and a direct pathway for the communion of my own soul. We have come to a Silmar, spent this wonderful week together in love for each other and adoration for the God we believe in. Many wonderful things have happened that would seem miracles if we didn't know about them. And now we meet for this fond farewell after the spiritual bath of peace, the baptism of the Spirit. Not through me, but you to me, and I to you through each other. The revelation of the self to the self. We go back into the highways and the byways of life with something so great that never again will anything be quite the same. A little more light shall come, a little greater glory added to the glory that we already possess. A deeper consciousness, a higher aspiration, a broader certainty of the mind. You are religious science. I am not. I am only the one who puts something together. I do not take myself seriously, but I take what I am doing seriously. You are religious science, our ministers, our teachers, our practitioners, and our laymen. You find me 1,000 people in the world who know what religious science is and use it and live it as it is. And I'll myself live to see a new world, a new heaven, and a new earth here. There is a cosmic power wrapped up in a cosmic consciousness and purpose that is equal to the vision which releases it. What I am saying is this. There is a law that backs up the vision, and the law is immutable. Heaven and earth shall pass away. There is a power transcendent beyond our needs, our little wants, demonstrating a dime is good if one needs it, or healing oneself of pain is certainly good if one has it. But beyond that, at the real feast, at the tabernacle of the Almighty, in the temple of the living God, in the banquet hall of heaven, there is something beyond anything that you and I have touched. Find 1,000 people who know that and use it, and the world will no longer be famished. How important it is that each one of us, in his simple way, shall live from God to God, with God, in God, and to each other. That is why we are here, and we are taking back with us. I trust a vision and an inspiration, something beyond a hope and a longing, that the living Spirit shall walk through us anew into its own creation, and a new glory came with a new dawn. And so it is. Thank you. I had to fight some tears at that moment because I think about him and I think about standing, and he was a little guy, so he always had to step on a step. You know, he couldn't have used this podium. But potent in his belief. I just spent 3 days with a number of ministers. I'm now part of the clergy council who creates a yearly retreat for ministers, a retreat of renewal, so that we get to be with each other and hear each other and listen to each other, because we love our congregations very much, but there are some things that only other ministers can relate to. And we were out to dinner one night, and someone said, one of the ministers was saying that one of his congregants said, "Why aren't there more rich ministers if with this teaching is what it is?" And he said with such definiteness, "Because we don't believe enough," he said. I thought about that, but no, that doesn't make any sense to me. What I believe is that, because I do believe in the power of the law, and I do believe the law is immutable, and I do believe that we can move heaven and earth, because I've seen heaven and earth move. I've seen healings, and I've seen transformation of individuals, and I've seen people come from unhappy to happy, and I've seen people come from not employed to employed and not creative to creative. But a couple things are real for me. I, in my lifetime, in my family's lifetime, I don't know, going back how far, we had no mental equivalent, and a mental equivalent is a word that we use for how we focus on the thing that we want to demonstrate. So basically, if you want a new car, I would say to you, go to the Audi dealer, go to the BMW dealer, and get a mental equivalent of that car. You understand? If you want to demonstrate a new home, I say go drive through the beautiful neighborhood that you want to live in. Get a mental equivalent and a feeling experience of that. But what I know about in my family, and this is not a complaint, this is just an analysis, I realize I have no mental equivalent for richness. I didn't come from money. My family didn't have money. Nobody in my family has money. I've had money two times in my life. But so the idea of rich is not something that's common to me. It's just not common. What is common to me is love. What is available to me, what I have a direct mental equivalent for, is love. What I have a direct mental equivalent for in a real sense and a real handle on is emotional health and emotional maturity. So I have all those with ease and grace, and so that's what I bring to the party more often. The rich stuff is still something that I'm working with, and yet I feel like I have a flow in my life that has provided ease and grace. I'm not suffering. The truth is I'm just too darn happy to be thinking about it that much. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to be funny, but you get that? Like, and I think sometimes we get into the spiritual community, we get happy, so sometimes we stop wanting for things. I don't really want for things very much. Now, let me tell you, the home I just stayed in with in Colorado is clearly how a lot of the other half of the world lives. You know, I mean, this huge, beautifully appointed home, it was stunning. They treated us like kings and queens. You know, it was beautiful. And even though it's a really dirty job, someone has to do it. And so this clergy has to meet twice a year face-to-face. So next year in January, our next face-to-face meeting is in Maui. That's their second home. Okay? They clearly have a mental equivalent for money and for richness. So it was fabulous to be there because I got to drink it in. And these are beautiful, wonderful, down-to-earth people. Beautiful. But it just wasn't common to me. So, but what I realize is that I do believe. I just haven't focused my belief and sandwiched it with a mental equivalent enough to maybe demonstrate that, which is the one thing that we think is the full measurement of this teaching. It's not. Because it's a measurement. Now, if you want richness in your life, richness is yours. If you want health in your life, health is yours. Where do you put your attention is the key. The law is immutable. So when your attention gets caught in less than, your job is to pull it from less than to enough. When you're struggling, and if there is a financial thing, if there's something going on, your job is to get your attention away from lack and put it on, I am enough, I have enough, I allow enough, I accept enough. And that's what Holmes wanted us to do. He wanted us to have this direct relationship to the presence of God within, making it very available, and then using it in a potent and powerful way. That was his charge to us. To get our head out of suffering. To get our head out of the habitual storytelling that we do with ourselves. How do you know? What's going on in your life? That's how you know. You know what you believe in by what's going on. And so when what's something that's going on isn't the something that you want, as cold as this sounds, is you have to turn your face from it, which is a form of repenting, We repent by turning our attention away from the situation that we don't want and turning it toward the light of who we are. So true repenting is turning away from the effect. One of my colleagues on this retreat, she was sharing with us that she just found that her friend has stage 4 cancer, and went into tears right away. She's a new minister. She's a new minister within this teaching. And she was there, and she was asking us for a little bit of support and advice. And what I said to her right away, I said, you have to heal your belief in cancer. You believe in cancer. That's why you're in pain. She got it. She does the studies, but she was getting caught in the emotions of it. But when you called me to service, when you called me to support you, I must not give authority to the thing I'm supporting you to get away from. If you're not feeling well, I cannot give authority to the flu that you might think you have or to the whatever it is. What I'm going to give authority to is the healing presence that's within you that gets activated when I call it out. And it's your job to call it out in me, and it's your job to call it out in your community. So that's what we see in each other on a regular basis. We look to see wholeness and perfection and fullness and abundance. And we our conversations, it behooves us to have our conversations be around there. And I know what goes on sometimes behind the scenes. I know some of the conversations that sometimes you have because you still feel the need to whine. Wine has one purpose, and if you're not drinking it, it's not serving you. I'm serious. The habit of whining is detrimental to your spiritual and your emotional health. I'm being straight with you. It is a habit that must be cast out. The complaining that we do to each other is a habit that you can't afford if you want to embrace the bigger idea of you. This is what Holmes meant with give him people who will use it and live it fully. Now, be honest. I'm going to ask you a question. Be honest. Raise your hand if you've never opened the Science of Mind textbook. Well, you're forgiven, because I know you're here for the first time. Actually, you're all forgiven anyway. But it's a mistake. You want to get your hands on, you want to get into that textbook, and you want to understand it. And if you really want to understand the Science of Mind the Science of Mind teaching, study the glossary. That's what we study when we become practitioners. That's what we study when we become ministers. And that's what I have the classes study. We go into the glossary a lot, because if you want to understand Holmes, you want to understand his meaning for words, which isn't always the meaning of the rest of the world. He takes a lot of latitude. He's very creative in how he describes things. So do that for yourself inside, and if they're not there, I'll get them out there for at least next week. There's a brochure that says, read the Science of Mind textbook in a year. And what it does over a 365-day period, it gives you a little snippet of the textbook to go into. There is so much power and so much strength in this teaching. And if you are not grabbing it, you're missing the gift of why you're here. And that is only one piece of it. That's the tough stuff. You want to read some poetry. You read this thing called You, The Art of Life. Some of his other texts. Google his name on Amazon and buy everything you can, because a lot of his stuff is out of print. The law is immutable. I've said it now 4 times today. The law is immutable. The law means, when I say the law, what I am meaning is the power of God It's where God shows up as a power, and God always shows up as a yes. So when I declare I am whole, perfect, and complete, the law itself is pouring itself in and through me, supporting me to the best of my consciousness. Unfortunately, if I say I am stupid, it is also pouring itself in and through me, saying, yep, I guess you're stupid. It will not choose for you. You must choose wisely, little grasshoppers. But it's always within your hands. It sounds kind of cold a lot of the times. It sounded somewhat cold initially when I said to my friend, you believe in cancer, but she got it. We have to heal our consciousness. We are here to heal our belief system. You're not limited. I mean, you come here for love, but the love isn't just here. It's what you bring into the room. You come for the teaching. Come for the teaching. Come to learn how to practice. Come to learn how to pray. And if you have not yet taken a Science of Mind class, and I mean specifically Science of Mind, do that in September. But dive into the educational element. If you haven't taken the Four Agreements with me, take it in June. Because we weave together Science of Mind and the Four Agreements in a powerful workshop. If you are not taking other classes this summer or anything else, if you want your summer to be fruitful, and my prayer request this morning with my prayer partner is for me to know the summer as I can know it, because summer for me, Seth stops going to school. I don't have to get him up in the morning. I don't have to make him go to bed. I don't have to think about lunch. It's like, oh, thank God. I love the summer. And I get to dive into God. I vacation and I have fun, but I get to really be with me and my God. And I invite you to do the same. Your God, the teaching, Holmes. And I'm going to say this one more time. I can't recommend enough the class that Bill's going to be teaching, which is Living from Awareness. Awareness is the first step to everything. Everything. It takes work. I'm not going to bless you and have you walk out of here and have it all be done. It needs your participation. I'm sorry, this is the center you decide to come to. But it's how you get potent. Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you understand? Right? Are you with me with this? Utilize the education. It makes you think. It makes you wake up. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. So this summer, it's all about homes. And I don't have homework today, but you'll be finding homework and invitations to read certain readings, to look in different books, to look up certain quotes, and we'll try to make it as fun for you as possible. Next week, Stephanie Dowrick is going to be here. Stephanie Dowrick is an amazing speaker. And none of you probably know her. And the reason why you don't is because where she is famous is in Australia. Reverend Joel says she is in Australia what Marianne Williamson is here. Do not miss her. Bring your friends. She is quite a gift as a speaker and a teacher. Reverend Joel's workshop after that, his Inspire Sunday workshop that will be happening after that service next week, is in the history of New Thought. Fascinating. It's fascinating. You're really going to want to go home and start Googling and going onto Amazon and finding old books about all of these subjects and build your Science of Mind library. Yes? Yes? Okay. And I want to actually just bring back something we've been doing over the past 2 weeks. We did I Accept and I Allow So I just want to do this with you so you can get your body into it. Remember last week we talked about I accept, I allow? So do this. I accept.
I accept.
I allow.
I allow.
And this is an old one from a couple of years ago. With ease and grace. I accept, I allow, with ease and grace. So when you get this going, you get your body involved, you get a message that goes more into your body temple, okay? Just think about it in that way. You can almost pray this way silently, right? I accept, I allow. With ease and grace. Okay? So let's hold the hand of somebody, if you will. Let's make a connection. Get up and connect and touch another life. So let us know on this day that the charge that was given to all religious scientists in 1959 is still alive now. And I, Michelle Wadley, implore you to live an extraordinary life. I implore you to make yourself available to the presence, the power, and the oneness of God, being lifted, guided, supported, and inspired at all times. I implore you to be the all that you can be, to be the more of you, the not yet expressed of you, to be the love that you are, to practice forgiveness, to practice self-forgiveness, to practice self-love. I declare that all the wherewithal and all the understanding is right available right now within your consciousness to make this happen. It is good and very, very good as each one of us live into the I accept, I allow with grace and ease. All that is good and very, very good. I know this for you. I know this for each member. I allow it to be so, and so it is.